Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast about homebrew electronics and amateur radio. This is a program for people who like to melt solder and build their own rigs. For other episodes of the program, go to www.soldersmoke.com. For the latest Solder Smoke news, go to soldersmoke.blogspot.com. Please send feedback to n2cqr@yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke. All right, guys, good morning. It's Sunday, the 6th of December, 2009. That makes this Solder Smoke 119. Sorry for the delay. A lot of stuff going on around here. I'll explain. Very busy, but very happy to get in front of the Solder Smoke microphone, such as it is, and say hello to you all. One of the activities that kept us busy, and I guess this is in the Solder Smoke travelogue, Italy travelogue section, I was asked to make a speech here. This happens from time to time as part of my work, but this one was particularly fun because it had nothing to do with work. It was at Maria's school, and they were doing a section on, in the fourth grade, they were studying emergency response and how people respond to emergencies, and Morse code came up, and my daughter mentioned that I know the Morse code. Next thing you know, I was invited to speak, hey, get this, to all three fourth grade classes at my kid's school. Went over there. I brought my my old straight key, rigged up a little audio oscillator, and gave the kids a little talk on the code. They were, really interested in it. They were very nice. They had great questions. Afterwards, we went out to the yard with a little shortwave receiver and let them listen to some actual CW. And I don't know, at an age where when kids aren't supposed to be interested in this kind of thing at all, they're all very interested. The teachers seemed interested too. So it was great fun, and I really enjoyed that. Also on Travelogue, I guess we should talk about this. You know, a while back we were talking about the wild boar. Over the summer, Billy and I were temporarily thwarted in our efforts to camp out in the Sabine Hills by the perceived threat from wild boar, from the cinghiali. And these things can reportedly get quite big. We had one neighbor reported one to be a Volkswagen size. And I put a couple of pictures up on the Solder Smoke blog about some particularly large wild boar that have been sighted at different places around the world. Well, we found out last weekend exactly how big the cinghiali in our area really are, because as we were departing from the country place, we came across some hunters, and they told us, yeah, we just got one. And we went down to their to the garage, really, where they were getting ready to clean this thing, and there he was. And pretty big, I must say, pretty big. Not not a little kind of porky pig, kind of friendly little bit of not a little barnyard kind of cute kind of pig. Not at all. This thing was big and ugly and hairy, and had tusks and everything. It was roughly the size of Billy. And if you want more information, go to the soldersmoke.blogspot.com page. Scroll down a bit, and you'll see a picture of this really ugly and very dead cinghiali, kind of hung up and getting ready to be skinned, with kind of Billy standing next to him, looking kind of suspicious. And Maria has her normal little angelic smile, which seems kind of out of place next to the dead cinghiali with the kind of ghoulish hunters kind of lurking around with shotguns. Anyway, mystery solved. Not quite as big as we thought, but not your pint-sized bit of pork there either. Just these things are kind of big. Now, the hunters told us they didn't consider them dangerous, but I guess that's how you would think about it if you were standing there with a pump shotgun. Pump shotgun. A 12-gauge shotgun makes the cinghiali a whole lot less dangerous, but anyway, it was nice to be able to see the beast and get a good sense of how big they are. All right, let's see. Also, travelogue. Let me get this out of the way because you guys are going to be mad at me for doing this. You're going to be, listen, I'm telling you, you're going to say, what the heck is he doing? And Bill, something must be wrong because we have some movie reviews here this week. And I'm going to talk to you just very briefly about two recent movies that we saw. And, the thing you're not going to like about them, guys, and let's face it, it's mostly guys who are listening. My apologies to any of our female listeners, but most of you guys are guys. And the movies I'm going to talk about are definitely in the category chick flicks. Two chick flicks. I was taken to two chick flicks in recent months. And I guess I'm a secure enough individual to tell you that I like them both for different reasons. First, and you might find this one kind of hard to understand. We were up in northern Italy in the early part of November, and we were at a place called Aviano, and we noticed my wife had been dying to see this movie called Julie and Julia, and one of the reasons we wanted to see it is because and this is like almost shameless name dropping here, but we had a chance to meet Meryl Streep when she was in Rome. So okay, we meet Meryl Streep, always been one of Elise's favorite actresses, especially. They've got the CD with ABBA and Mamma Mia and all that. So it's been like a Meryl Streep festival around here recently. Okay, anyway, we're up at Aviano. They're playing Julie and Julia. We went to see it. I admit it. I liked it. I liked it because of several elements. One, there's a craft element here. Now, if your wife or girlfriend drags you off to this movie, don't resist too much. Say, okay, I'll go. Because you'll find there's things about it that you like. There's a craft element there, and it describes Julia Childs, who's a very interesting person, of course, and her efforts to become expert at the art of French cooking. There's also a blogging element there. There's this young woman in New York who becomes a blogger, so they talk about blogging. We found it interesting also because it was about the diplomatic life. Julia Childs' husband was in the diplomatic game, and it discussed a little bit about their itinerant lifestyle. So, okay, there you go. Julie and Julia, at least a thumbs up here from the Solder Smoke Movie Review Department. Second movie, also definitely a chick flick, but at the younger age of the spectrum. New Moon. This is the vampire movie, guys. A lot of good special effects. Maria was the one who dragged me to this one, and I was very happy to go with her because it was an entertaining movie. This one we saw in Italian, and I found that my Italian in the vocabulary used by kind of teenage adolescent kind of people is really kind of shaky because I had a tough time following it. I thought, most of the time I listen to anything in Italian, it's fine. I have no problem understanding it. I didn't know what these kids were talking about. Anyway, but the special effects were good. Maria interpreted where necessary, and one of the things I want to say was really kind of coincidental. There's one scene in the movie where they shoot it in Italy, and it's in this beautiful Tuscan town of Montepulciano, and we just happened to be in Montepulciano on our way up to and on our way back from north of Italy, and it's a beautiful town. And when we got there, we noticed that all in almost every restaurant and cafe that we went into, they had pictures of the day in which the movie crew came and shot the new vampire movie. So it was a lot of fun. We saw the vampire movie in there. We could see, oh yeah, there's the cafe. Well, yeah, we knew the whole place. We've been in the church and everything else. New Moon. If your daughter drags you off to New Moon, don't resist too much. It's not that bad. Okay, that's it. Solder Smoke Movie Reviews. That should take care of it for the year. I'm sure many of you are relieved. Also, I guess sort of in the category of kind of electronic travelogue here, or just a little bit of local flavor. Let's face it, guys. The thing that produces solder smoke is not the solder; it's the flux. That's what that puff of white smoke that comes up there is. That's become our symbol, our trademark here. And I may have mentioned in the previous Solder Smoke that I am now in the process of building my SoftRock 40 software-defined radio. And I'll talk about more about this in a minute, but One of the things they recommend is having some flux around. And I've usually limited myself to using the flux that is in the core of the rosin core solder. But, well, okay, I figured I'd go out and see on the local market if I could come up with some additional flux that might be useful in soldering all these teeny tiny connections that are required in the fascinating world of surface mount electronics. And I went across to the couple of the hardware stores right here in Trastevere. And let me reach over. I'm going to take a picture of this thing because it really looks kind of cool. It looks like something that you'd buy in the States in the 1950s. And it's got this kind of, I'm sure they haven't changed the packaging since about 1952. But the name of the product is Stagnosald. Stagnosald. Pasta Stagnosald. Per saldare. Well, I'm all tongue-tied here. Per saldare. And great-looking package. Kind of, like I said, 1950s kind of retro packaging here. I checked. It's not acid core, so don't worry. It's not for it's not for plumbing. It is for electronics. And it has proved a bit useful. I have a lifetime supply here. It's quite a big package. So I'm going to put a picture of Stagnosald up there on the Blogspot page. That's pretty good. I've got a list of things to talk about here. Hey, discovery of water on the moon. We were talking a while back about the spacecraft that they were going to crash into the crater, and we thought that was all very interesting. And then the initial reports were that it was a big flop because nobody could see the big impact plume that was supposed to be visible from the Earth. But then later on, when they did an analysis of a more careful scientific analysis, apparently they found a whole bunch of water there. So the space cadets, and I count myself among them, are all very excited because this opens up all kinds of possibilities of lunar bases and refueling on the moon and everything else. So, three cheers for NASA for discovering or confirming the presence of water. It's apparently all special, all down in those in the dark bits of those craters near the lunar poles where the sun never shines, and apparently quite a bit of water there. So I thought that was a pretty important discovery. Google, by the way, also thought it was pretty important because they came up with their they changed the Google theme for Thanksgiving or for Halloween, and they came up with a special one for the discovery of water on the moon, or confirmation of it. Very good. Hey, I got my first issue of QRP Quarterly from the ARCI guys. Very, very nice magazine. Well done. I've been hearing about it for years. I've been picking up old copies of it for years at Hamfest, but for some reason I just never got on the subscription list. So I fired up the computer, got PayPal going, and became a subscriber, got the first issue, and really enjoyed it very much. Very nice product, well done, beautifully done. A lot of interesting articles in there. So thanks very much to the guys who put out QRP Quarterly. I know it's a lot of work, and really appreciate the effort. Here's something else on the list. In our last episode, we talked about the whistling S problem, the perennial whispering S problem. You may be listening to it right now. And this has been a real process of discovery for me. I've discovered that I have a speech impediment, and apparently I've had it all these 51 years, and I never was aware of it until solder smoke made me aware of yet another problem that I'm walking around with. it's there, and now I'm aware of it. Now when I speak, I can occasionally hear the little whisper coming out, even when not in front of the solder smoke microphone. And Mike of, I don't have his call, but of AMDX has sent in some suggestions. And actually, he has connections, I think, in the audio area. And he consulted some experts, and they gave me a long, very good list of things that I could do to eliminate this problem. Some of the solutions were highly kind of circuitry related and filtering related and microphone related, but there was one there that really kind of caught my attention, because we always try to go for the simple solution, and this one had a certain charm to it, because And it really looked like it might be the solution to our problems. Mike said that what they do in recording studios every once in a while, if they've got somebody who comes in who has this kind of whistling S problem, they take a piece of gum or sometimes a piece of tape and they put it across the gap in the two front teeth of the individual concerned. And sometimes that's where the whistle is coming from. And just a little bit of gum or a little bit of some sort of paste or something, dough or something stuck in there. And I don't recommend using crazy glue or anything like that, only in really severe cases. Apparently that's enough to take care of the problem. And so I said, aha, that's it, because I do indeed have a gap between the two front teeth. I was rebelling against my parents' efforts at orthodonture as a kid. And so we never got that gap quite completely closed. And I thought, that's it. That's the cause. I'm whistling because of the gap in my two front teeth. So I went to the kids and I got some of their kind of particularly kind of gooey kind of candy. It was not long after Halloween, so there was a lot of this stuff around. And in the last episode of Solder Smoke, during the initial part of the program, I had this bit of juju fruit or whatever it was stuck in between my two front teeth. And as I was doing it, I knew that it was just making things worse. So that's why I got emails from a number of you guys who wrote in saying, whatever you did, you made it worse. All right, so anyway, we scratched that off the list, and now we have to go into the more scientific suggestions. I guess I'm using one of them right now because some people said that it wasn't so bad when I was kind of looking away from the microphone. So I'm speaking kind of across the mic, not directly into it now. And I once again solicit your feedback to see if this speaking across the mic rather than speaking directly into it has any effect on the audio quality. On the number of shows, I love getting the emails about the shows, and I get a lot of feedback. Get emails just about every day from people who like the show. And one guy wrote in and said that he wants me to do more, and maybe we could make it weekly or even more frequently. And I said, wow, that was my initial reaction was that was really scary. I said, once every 2 weeks is probably enough or more than enough. And if we started doing this anymore, and especially if we started doing things like Twitter or more intense use of Facebook, we could easily degenerate into cult status here, guys. We could be put on the list of cults, cult groups. So no, I think once every 2 weeks is probably more than enough. Let's see. Oh man, here's a troubleshooting story for you. You guys are gonna like this one. I've been talking about Whisper. I really like the Joe Taylor's weak signal propagation reporter program, Whisper, and I've been talking about it on and off, I guess, for about a year now. And recently, Joe released a new version of Whisper, Whisper 2.0, with a lot of useful improvements. Two of which seem to be aimed directly at me. So thanks very much, Joe. I'm sure it's purely coincidence, but wow, two of the new features were just seem to be custom made for me. One allows for compound call signs. Before, I had to be on Whisper as N2CQR because the old software just would not accept I0/N2CQR. But the new one does, so now I'm correctly identified as being in I0 land and not in N2 land. And that was great. And the other thing is that he came up with a version that you could use with Linux Ubuntu. Excellent, because as I pointed out not long ago, a very kind listener sent along an old laptop, and we loaded up the old laptop with Ubuntu. And so that's what I'm using now as my main computer. And I managed to get Whisper in there. No problem at all. Went right in. But I noticed a strange thing. The computer and Whisper, sometimes the entire computer, seemed to be crashing and shutting down a lot. I try to leave it on because, as you're working around the house, you want Whisper on, whispering, sending your signal out to all different places all around the world. And, you know, it just, for some reason, it wasn't happening. Let me see here. I'm just reaching for some notes. There are my notes. Hold on a second. All right, it wasn't happening. And there was a strange sequence. I'd leave the shack, everything would be set up, and I'd come back, and either Whisper would be shut down, sometimes the entire computer would be shut down. And, you know, I went and checked all the power management configuration software. I checked the screensaver. I went to see if there was anything in Whisper that was causing it to shut down. Nothing. Everything seemed normal, but the thing was shutting down. And this was really odd because, you know, Linux Ubuntu is known for its stability. Well, one day, I guess around Thanksgiving time, I come into the shack, and there's something distinctly different because Tyson the cat is in the shack, and he normally doesn't venture in here because he knows he doesn't get a lot of sympathy from me. I'm nice to the cat, but not too nice. The cat knows that his best friends are the kids and my wife, and so he's in here, and I realized that why he's in here is because the laptop, especially the keyboard of the laptop, gets nice and warm. Tyson is a fat cat, and Tyson the fat cat was coming in and using the keyboard as a nice little kind of warming pad here for him to sleep during the day and at night. So my efforts to keep Whisper running were being disturbed, not by any kind of software problems with Whisper 2.0, not by any shortcoming with Linux Ubuntu, but by Tyson the fat cat plopping himself down on the keyboard, which I will confirm definitely will shut down the software and often the computer. So Tyson has been banished, and Whisper and Ubuntu are now running just fine. I get all kinds of reports. You know, I was looking on the Whisper system, and I put this up on the blog yesterday. On the 21st of November, Joe Taylor reports that for the first time, the Whisper system recorded more than 100,000 spots in one day. In one 24-hour period, more than 100,000 signal reports were logged. And the way it works on Whisper is that when you're in receive mode, if you receive a system, it's very easy to set up your computer so that if your receiver computer Whisper software system detect a signal, they automatically will report it to the Whisper server, to the Whisper computer, and it goes up on the log that is visible for everyone to see on the online Whisper database. So on the 21st of November, for the first time, there were more than 100,000 spots in that 24-hour period, which I think is really remarkable. Since they started this, and it's only been a few years now, they have logged in the system about 14,600,000 reports. That's a lot. You get a sense of how much activity there is and how many reports are being kind of received and reported if you take a look at the Whisper map. And I have a sample of this up on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com page. You might be interested in checking it out. I think it's really interesting. I joked that, you know, conspiracy theorists who worry about people trying to take over the world would probably be quite disturbed by the Whisper map. The way I have it configured, it looks like some vast European conspiracy. Check it out. My own numbers are I think, interesting, far more humble, but interesting. Just for my station, on December 3rd, in a 15-hour period from around 06:30 to about 15:45 on December 3rd, my little 20-milliwatt double sideband Whisper signal, by the way, I think it's still the only double sideband signal using Whisper in the world. Anyway, during that 15-hour period, 416 spots. My station was picked up 416 times, reported to the Whisper, to Whisper HQ, 416 times by 18 different stations. So obviously each station was picking it up, you know, 10, 20, 25 times. And the Best DX was a good day because I crossed the pond that day and I was picked up four times by W3HH, Whiskey 3 Hotel, down in Florida. And in almost all these reports, I was, 20 or 25 dB below the noise. So it just shows you the power of whisper. I have no special antennas. I just have a random wire out the window. And output is 20 milliwatts double sideband, so that's about 10 milliwatts on each sideband. And again, in a 15-hour period with no special effort, the signal was picked up 416 times and crossed the pond. So three cheers for Joe Taylor and Whisper. Really interesting stuff. I guess I want to talk a little bit now. This is something that's kind of intriguing me. This is an opportunity. You know, I told you about this computer. It's an old Satellite Pro computer. I guess it's about 10 years old. I think it's got a Pentium 3 in it. It's got a 5 gig hard drive. It's, by modern standards, really, not modern. But for surfing the web and for doing all kinds of other things that hams do on the internet, it does. I think it does probably 90% of the things that I do with the internet, and it does it using the completely free Ubuntu Linux operating system. Ubuntu Linux is fairly easy to use. I'm not a software wizard, but I got it going. As long as Tyson stays off the keyboard, everything seems just fine. But you know what this made me think was that, and I'm sure many of you have already thought of this, I joke that here at Solder Smoke we use roadkill computers. I've got all kinds of junk that's accumulated over the years, and I think the average age of the computer in the shack is probably around 8 or 9 years old. The family jokes that I get the hand-me-down computers. Anytime my wife or the kids get a new computer, I get the old one, and then it goes here. So it's the shack is also starting to look sort of like a computer museum. Billy last night was joking that it's starting to look like Mission Control with all these screens and keyboards. But anyway, roadkill computing. These old laptops. I checked on eBay to see how much a computer like the one I'm using right now goes for. It's about $50. These old laptops, I think most normal people, most people who aren't knack victims would be reluctant to pick them up and try to use them. But there's all kinds of things that we can do with them. So, and also I think there's probably older people or older hams out there who need a computer and don't have one and think that it's beyond their economic capabilities. Now they don't want to plunk down $1,000 or $1,500 for a new computer. Well, they could probably get most of what they need for $50. Also, it's nice to have an additional computer, especially a laptop around the shack, for an application like Whisper, where you want it running all the time, but you don't want to tie up your main computer. So, anyway, roadkill computing. Let's recycle some of these old machines. Fire them up with Linux and Linux Ubuntu. Turn them into something really useful. I mean, it's part of the knack symptoms to want to make use of bits of old technology that normal humans have declared to be obsolete. So, anyway, that's what I was thinking. And thanks again to the listener who sent in the computer. I've had some communications with NA5N. We're working on his excellent. I keep mentioning this article, The Handyman's Guide. Now, Paul has been real busy. Paul, NA5N, has been real busy on work projects. And what we're talking about here is an article from 2002, from the AtlantiCon conference in 2002, called A Handyman's Guide to QRP Transmitters. I thought it was really good. And I've been going back and forth with Paul. Tony Fishpool in the UK is also involved, and we're trying to get an updated version of the Handyman's Guide available to the Solder Smoke Sprat GQRP QRPL community, and we're working on it. Paul is a busy guy, and he's got an amazingly interesting job. He's got one of those ham dream jobs, and he works on the Very Large Array. This is the radio telescope that was featured in the movie Contact. The actress was out there. Jodie Foster, that's the one. Jodie Foster was out there with her headphones and the big set of antennas there listening for E.T. Well, Paul works at the Very Large Array. And so when I occasionally write to him saying, how's it going with the Handyman's Guide, I always say, I realize you're, you know, very busy, what with, you know, exploring the universe and all that. but he's going to be working on it, and we hope to have Handyman's Guide updated, new and improved, out to you in not too much time. We'll get it out. Let me see here. I want to talk about a bit about the Soft Rock 40 project. And the Soft Rock 40 guys sent me their kit a year ago, and I'm ashamed to say it's been sitting around for a year, but I finally got the urge to melt solder and build this thing. And I got to say from the beginning that I've had to really try, and this is important, not to be a grumpy old man about this thing. You guys know what I'm talking about. This is different. I've never really built anything with surface mount technology before. I've never built anything where the boards were this small or this tightly packed. And, you know, we all have a tendency to get set in our ways. And my ways have been mostly, in recent years, big open space Manhattan style construction, where you have a lot of room. You know, you have these big, these soldering pads that are as big as your pinky finger. They're big. You got a lot of room in there. And so as a result, most of my rigs are a lot bigger physically than really they should be. And they could, you could probably take all the circuitry and pack it down in a tenth of the space. But I build for comfort, and I believe in wide open spaces on circuit boards. So anyway, the Soft Rock 40 project is definitely new territory for me. I'm fortunate in that a poem, you know, we do a little bit of poetry here, but it's mostly the result of contributions from Michael AA1TJ, the poet laureate of QRP. But another bit of poetry came across our screen here this week. George K8VU sent this one in, and it was a poem that that General MacArthur apparently kept on his wall, the wall of his office during World War II, and it's called "Youth" by a fellow named Ullman, and that the latter portion of the poem seems to be directly related to radio and wireless. Anyway, it came at a good time for me because it was about keeping an open mind. Gentlemen, we're joined by the lovely and talented Maria Patricia. Say hello.
Hi.
There she is. Just woke up. 9 years old. Anyway, the poem was about keeping an open mind about new things and everything else. And it came in just as I was opening the box on the Soft Rock 40 project. Good timing. Because I did need to be reminded about the need to keep an open mind. It's a wonderful kit, wonderful product. It's new to me. It's a new way of doing things. I had never, ever soldered a surface mount component before. Let me tell you, it's not so bad. I got the knack of it pretty quickly, no pun intended, and got those little capacitors and surface mount resistors on the board without too much trouble. And so slowly but surely, the Soft Rock 40 is coming together here. I did manage to fry one of the regulators. There's a little tiny 3.5 or 3.3 volt regulator there, and I think I cooked it with a little bit too much heat. But anyway, I've no problem. I ordered a replacement from DigiKey, and it's on the way. And I temporarily shifted away from the main board and built the second board, the power amplifier board. That's got two binocular core toroids in there, and a number of regular toroidal coils. They gave me no problems at all. I've been building toroidal transformers for a long time, so they went together no problem. And then soon I'm going to be heading back to the main board and get that thing done. And I hope to fire this up with the Ubuntu computer that I mentioned before. I have a neat little box for the whole thing, and I think it's going to come together very nicely. It'll be a really good addition to the shack. The power amplifier board, it's an interesting circuit. It uses two MOSFETs in push-pull, and a third identical MOSFET is in there on the same heat sink. Excuse me, obviously to provide temperature regulation for the bias circuitry. So I like it. It's, you know, in the power amplifier section, it's all discrete components, no ICs, and a very familiar circuitry. Now, the size of the power amplifier board is, again, this is new territory for me. The size of the entire PA, including the driver and the two MOSFETs in push-pull, all the transformers, all the bias circuitry is about the size of my thumb. So I am working with magnifier glasses, and but it's not that bad. I kind of expected the surface mount thing to be the biggest challenge, but you know what? What's most different, and I guess most difficult for me, is not the surface mount part of it, but it's the fact that I'm now using PC boards with through holes, with holes that go all the way through. And what this means is that I've gotten used to Manhattan surface mount, where you put the component in, and if you want to change it or move it around, or you have to take it out or put in a new part, it's no problem. It's much more difficult on a PC board of this type, and that just goes with the kind of board that's being used. So I really have to get used to the idea that when I solder something in there, it's pretty much for keeps, because trying to get one of these components out after you've put it through the hole and soldered it in can actually be quite difficult, certainly a lot more difficult than with Manhattan-style construction. So anyway, thanks again to Tony and the Soft Rock 40 guys. I think they're really doing great work to revolutionize ham radio here and bring the computer and traditional ham radio communities together. I hope to use this thing. I hope to actually be submitting reception reports on Whisper with it, and trying out all the very exciting modes that come when you have a rig like this hooked up to the computer. And thanks for sending me the kit. And it's again, I'm going to try hard not to become a grumpy old man and start complaining about how small the components are and how difficult the soldering is. Again, it's not that bad. And for those of you out there who are kind of reluctant to jump into the Soft Rock SDR world because of fear of surface mount, I wouldn't get too concerned about it. You could do it. I mean, I wear reading glasses like everybody else does, and I have no problem kind of seeing these things. Sometimes you need to pull out the magnifier and check to make sure that your soldering connection was done. I don't have any real specialized equipment here. I'm using the same soldering iron that I always use. I have variable heat, so I probably need to turn the heat down a little bit so I don't fry the the replacement voltage regulator. But it's been fun. I'm enjoying it, and I hope to get the thing on the air soon. Let's see. Oh, man, just another little bit of kind of Rome travelogue here. Billy is involved in classes, after-school activities, and his after-school activity now, this is a real Italian thing. One of the sports that's big here, and you guys in the States probably find this hard to believe, but fencing. Fencing is big in Italy. If you open up the sports pages, especially in the last few months, there's all kinds of stories about fencing competitions, in Italian scherma. And Billy and some of the kids from his school are into it. And so twice a week he takes fencing lessons. And it's really cool because the site for the fencing school is just about maybe 100 yards, 100 meters or so, from the Pantheon. And so I pick up Billy on the way home from work, and if I get into the area a little bit early, I have to wait for him. And on a rainy day, the best place for me to wait is in the Pantheon. And these days there aren't too many tourists in Rome, certainly not as many as in kind of high tourist season. So you walk into the Pantheon, it's open admission, and you sit there, and there's plenty of places to sit because it's also a Catholic church now. It's a basilica of Santa Maria. I forget, Santa Maria del Pantheon or something like that. And so I usually have a Sprat magazine with me, maybe Discovery magazine or something in my in my backpack, and I just found myself in the other day in the Pantheon reading Spratt, and I just reading some technical article, and I looked up and I just realized how lucky I am to be reading Spratt in the Pantheon. All right, I tell you, one of the big benefits of the job here. Another bit of news. Dan Small Parts out there in Montana is closed for the winter. I certainly can understand it, Dan. I hope he's headed for warmer climes, but this is at least temporary bad news for Solder Smoke and Solder Smoke fans. Hope Dan has a good vacation. I hope you're on vacation, Dan. Thanks for all your help. Some Ponticelli astronomy news. We were out at the Ponticelli radio, the Ponticelli QRP station and an astronomical observatory, and I had the telescope out. Standard looks at Jupiter, Mars, Pleiades, Orion. Also saw the North American Nebula in Orion's belt. Here's something interesting, guys, and I saw this in Discovery Magazine. You guys all know about Orion, and I'm sure even those of you who are not amateur astronomers can spot Orion in the sky. The big red one up at the head, sort of that you could see it as like the head of Orion, Betelgeuse. Hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. I'm reading in Discovery Magazine that since 1993, that star has grown 15% smaller. Has been reduced in size by 15% since 1993. Holy cow, that's an important star. And 15% since 1993, that's a big change. What's that all about? Anyway, that's an interesting thing. We also, I got up early Sunday morning last week. And as I walked out to the telescope, looked up, saw a nice satellite going ahead overhead. It wasn't bright enough to be the space station, I don't think, but a bright one going north to south. And then a few seconds later, a meteor flashed across. Very nice. I should have taken a look at Saturn. I didn't realize that Saturn was up in the morning these days. So we may be heading out to the country this weekend. And if so, I'll see if I can take a peek at Saturn in the morning. Let's see what else. Projects that I want to build, things that I want to have, that I want to build. I want to build one of these... Farhan's JBOT, just a bunch of transistor projects. That looks like a lot of fun. And I think it might provide kind of a welcome return to my wide open spaces, Manhattan surface mount kind of construction. So maybe when I get finished with the SoftRock 40, I'm going to build some JBOT amplifiers. What I need them for is I have a number of projects around from days gone by in which I had to pull out the power amplifier stage and use them on another project. I had great problems getting power amplifiers running here for a variety of reasons that we've discussed pretty much ad nauseum here on the program. But the result is I have all kinds of rigs sitting around that are ready to go. For example, I have a 17-meter double sideband transceiver that's completely good and ready to go, except it doesn't have a power amplifier. And so I think that this JBOT circuitry might be just the thing, and I'm planning on building two or three of them to get all these rigs going so that if the sunspots ever come back and we ever return to 17 meters, we'll be ready to go. Guys, before we head off to the Solder Smoke mailbag, let me just check my list here to make sure I've mentioned all the very important things that we needed to talk about. I think we have. Let me remind you that Christmas is a-coming, and Christmas gift season is upon us. Now, I'm not suggesting that you buy the Solder Smoke, the book, for your significant other, for your wife or your girlfriend or anything like that. No, that probably wouldn't work too well. She probably wouldn't really appreciate it, but it's certainly acceptable these days to drop a hint and to help that other significant person in your life realize what's important to you, and realize that you would really prefer to find under that Christmas tree Solder Smoke, a global adventure in radio electronics, as opposed to another set of socks or another necktie or something like that. So Go ahead, print out that that page from the Solder Smoke blog where it describes how to buy the book, and leave that. Email it to your wife, and maybe she'll get the hint, and then Solder Smoke will be under the tree, and it'll be a happy experience for everybody. Also, you know, this might be a good time of year to be stocking up on your Solder Smoke wardrobe and coffee cup items. The link to the Cafe Press Solder Smoke store is there, and there's all kinds of fine items. Prices have been reduced. You can get your coffee mugs. You can get your softball hats. You can get your T-shirts, sweatshirts now that it's cold. It's all there, ready for you. And again, another good thing to do to suggest to your loved ones, people who are buying gifts for you this year, that this might be a good place for them to shop. Also, if you're looking for a way to help help Solder Smoke, as we pointed out from time to time, if you begin your Amazon shopping experience through the link provided on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com page, everything you buy causes Amazon to send us a bit of money, and that's a good thing. So if you think about it, when you're going to Amazon, start out at the soldersmoke.blogspot.com page. On the right-hand column, if you scroll down a little bit, there's a link there. You click on that, and then that somehow causes Amazon to give us a bit of credit for anything that you subsequently buy, and it doesn't cost you anything, so it's great. It's not money from you. It's money from the big corporate machine of Amazon.com coming to right here to Solder Smoke. So who could argue with that? All right, guys, now it's time for... Indeed. Yeah, Solder Smoke mailbag. Lots of mail. Andre, IK3KCB, is up there in northern Italy, northeastern Italy, just where we were. I think he's in the Trieste area, and we missed him during our trip. Sorry about that, Andre, but he just finished the ATS3 and working with surface mount and enjoying it too. Also, kind of up in the somebody else who was up in the northern Italy area, Mads LA1PTA. He was also in Verona. We were in Verona, and Mads, unlike me, found the radio museum there. I missed it, man. So we got to get back to Verona to find this great radio museum that Mads found. Next trip up north too, I want to stop at Sasso Marconi and visit the site where Marconi did his work. We've had a lot of Marconi interest recently because we're around the 100th anniversary, and I got to get back to that. I got to get there near Bologna to see where Marconi did his initial experiments. But thanks for the email there, Mads. Doug WB5TKI is reading SSTB, which is Solder Smoke the Book, and he spotted the book that I mentioned in there, Atoms to Amperes, by F. A. Wilson. And he spotted it on Amazon.com for a mere $50. A lot more than I paid for it, Doug, but it's a worthwhile thing. If you can get a hold of that book, I really recommend it. Jeff, KO7M, our friend with the Piper Cub. Before the weather turned bad up there in the Pacific Northwest, he was out flying around with the IFR hood on. Those of you who know a little bit about aviation know that this is how they train pilots to work on instruments. You put this hood on so that all you can see is the panel instruments, and you can't see outside the aircraft. He is also working on a soft rock receiver, and at the same time, and I think Jeff might be on the same wavelength that I am on this issue. While he's working on the soft rock receiver, he's also working on an old valve regen, tube type regen receiver. So yeah, I think you've got one foot in both worlds there, and there's some advantages to that. Akshay, VA7AAX, young fella up in Canada, one of our youngest listeners, he spotted an article that's been bouncing around on the web about edge of space balloons. There were some young people who put together one of these edge of space balloon experiments, and for very little money got a camera up to, I think, about 100 or 150,000 feet. Got some good pictures. Excellent stuff. Thanks for the report there, Akshay. Good luck in all your projects. Wes, W7ZOI, pointed, it gave me some words of encouragement on surface mount, and pointed out that there were others. Other hams also listened directly to the communications from the lunar surface. We have on the Blogspot page an interesting report about one radio amateur who built a corner reflector, kind of almost like a parabolic, not a parabolic, but a corner reflector antenna, quite large. And during the Apollo 11 mission, aimed his antenna at the moon and was able to listen to Neil and Buzz right from the lunar surface. So great stuff. But Wes points out that there were a number of other radio amateurs who did this. So thanks for that, Wes. Seeb Alpha Alpha One Mike Yankee, who has been working with Michael AA1TJ on their on the transatlantic projects. Michael trying to cross the Atlantic with the Code Talker, the New England Code Talker, and Seeb was able to get across with his QRP 160 meter transmitter. I had commented that, and I think I might have been a bit too harsh and unfair here. I had commented. They in their stories on the web about putting up the their kite supported antenna for the transatlantic effort, they mentioned that at one point the kite came down and the wires came down near power lines, and man, that just scared the daylights out of me. And there was a picture they posted of the antenna wire kind of hanging on a power pole there, and I said, oh man, that's not good. So anyway, these guys are very experienced radio amateurs, and they pointed out that they had taken all kinds of appropriate precautions beforehand, and so I'm sure, and I knew that was the case, and I'm just glad that Seeb had success in crossing the pond on 160. I know that Michael will soon do it with the Code Talker, and I look forward to seeing that. Oh yeah, I'm just seeing here in my notes the two other stations that. That we know of, that who listened to the Apollo 11 broadcast, WA7TZY and K2RIW. Okay, great. Brian, VE3VAW. Let's see. He was the one, Brian was the one who gave me some advice on how to get rid of the dreaded whistling S's. I'm hoping that we're making progress. Zabob KI. Zero G gave similar advice. John VK3AJG has a new DSB rig, and I put a link to the information about it up on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com page. Check it out. Stuart G3YSX provides a book recommendation, How Apollo Flew to the Moon by W. David Woods. Apparently this is more about the technology and less about the people. So it sounds very interesting, and I think I'm gonna put that on my my list for Mrs. Claus here to take care of. Mike N6OFT finally got himself a copy of Solid State Design for the Radio Amateur. Very pleased with that purchase. Congratulations, Mike. I'm sure you're gonna enjoy that. Dion K6WH, an interesting fellow who travels the world, who moves back and forth between San Diego and South Africa. He is having a lot of fun with his soft rock SDR surface mount transmitter. Let's see. Oh, here's a fun one. You know, I've been talking about Whisper, and the great thing about Whisper is you look forward to waking up in the morning, going to see the screen and seeing how many oceans you crossed and how many stations have picked you up. But I got a real kick out of it because the other day I got up and I found that I had been received not only by stations, most of the stations that pick me up are out about 1,200, 1,500 kilometers, basically one F-layer skip from Rome. It fits in really well with the with northern Germany, Denmark, the lower part of the Scandinavian countries there. UK stations are all in pretty good range for one hop, but I got a report from somebody who was inside the skip zone. Andrea IW0HK, right here in the Rome area, picked me up on Whisper, and we followed up via email. We're gonna get together soon, have a cup of coffee here in Trastevere, but Andrea is busy these days with an important new arrival. Harmonic number three has either arrived or is about ready to arrive. So we wish Andrea a lot of luck with that new QRP project there. Let's see. Gil sent in a really nice link to W8JI's top band boat anchor site. I put a link to this up on the Blogspot page. Check it out. Really great story there about W8JI's introduction to ham radio. You'll find it heartwarming and knack-inspiring. Check it out. The link's on the blog. And, oh yeah, I mentioned before Mike of AMDX, who's been providing the feedback on the audio on how to solve the S problem here. Hold on a second. I've got to find something. My mouse is... there's the mouse. Okay. All right. Got to reach over. anyway, Mike AMDX wrote in, and he's read the book, and he really liked it. And I get a lot of the feedback I get is really very gratifying. And this one was particularly fun because Mike said that right after he read the book, he was inspired. He checked the location of the space station, and he took his son outside, and they saw the space station going over. But they saw something flying along alongside it too. It looked like there were two of them flying along, and so they did some head scratching. They went back in and checked, and of course it was the space station. I mean, the space shuttle that had been that had either was on its way to link up or were, I think at this point was departing. So because of the book, Mike and his son got to step outside and were inspired and saw the space station and the space shuttle flying overhead. That's the kind of feedback we like to get, and those are the kind of stories we really like to hear. Glad you like the book. Thanks for sending the note, Mike. Let's see. Let's see. Rich at KD0 BJT. What a great call. KD0 BJT, bipolar junction transistor. Rich was inspired by solder smoke, and he and his son have got together to make their own podcast, and I want to put in a plug for it. LowSWR.com. So, guys, check it out. It sounds like a wonderful effort. Good luck to you, Rich. Good luck to you and your son. Jim, N3JIM, is just getting started and is interested in whisper, in the whisper mode. Asked for advice on how to get started with that. I sent him off some words that I hope are words of wisdom. Good luck with it. Woody, KF4TQJ, sent me along a link to a bit of software that looks like it's really interesting. I haven't had time to dig into it yet, but it looks like it's a lot of fun and a lot of interest, a lot of use for us, of a lot of use for us. It's called Splat, and it has to do with mapping and using Google Earth and mapping technology for ham radio propagation and antenna work. But it's available also on Ubuntu, and so I think if you need more information on that, just Google Splat. Bob wrote in. Bob is the guy who set up the Solder Smoke Facebook page, and Bob makes a comment that appears fairly regularly in feedback on the book. But Bob said that he has made me the alternate administrator, designated me as alternate administrator for the Facebook page of the Solder Smoke Facebook page. This is probably a bad move. Bob, because I tell you the truth, I can't figure Facebook out. My wife loves it.
Dad's working on it now.
Billy says he's working on it now. He's working on Facebook now. Everybody's using Facebook. Every time I get on Facebook, I just get confused, and I don't know the difference between the wall, and I don't know why people are sending me these messages, and I don't know how to send messages to people. This is the grumpy old man syndrome is kicking in here, guys. But anyway, in spite of my total incompetence in the Facebook social networking area, Bob has designated me as alternate administrator for the Solder Smoke page on Facebook. And he did this, he said, because he is now working on the high voltage portions of his DX60 transmitter. And he wants to leave the Sutter Smoke Facebook page in good hands should he have an unfortunate contact with the high voltage. Please, Bob, be careful. I don't want to have to take on these admin responsibilities here. Keep that. Remember, work with one hand, keep the other one behind you. You know, grab that back belt loop there when you're working on the high voltage. They told me to do that when I was in the Army. It's good advice. And try not to work on the thing when it's energized. But if you do have to do it that way, keep one hand behind you and make sure you got some insulating shoes on there. It'll make that jolt a whole lot easier to take if you get one. But be careful. And again, we do get a lot of comments from guys who on the book focus on the fact that I mentioned that I often think that it's a miracle that I survived to adulthood, considering some of the high voltage projects that that we routinely undertook as adolescent and teenage hams. God, I don't know how we didn't get electrocuted. When I think of some of the stuff I did, and you know, using all of the caution and prudence that that 12 and 13-year-old boys always have, none, but somehow survived. Thanks for the honor of making me Deputy Admin Director of the Solder Smoke Facebook page, Bob. I'm honored. Chris writes in from the Aosta Valley, Valdosta, up there in extreme northwest Italy. Chris is a shortwave listener now specializing in whisper work. That's great. And I'm afraid I caused him some confusion because I was listed on Whisper under the old set of software as just N2CQR. Because as I said, we didn't have compound call signs until a few weeks ago. So poor Chris picked up my Whisper signals and immediately thought he was picking up real DX. First, he thought he was getting somebody from N2 land. Not true. Then he checked on QRZ.com and got the idea that I was out in the Azores. Not true anymore. Sorry about that. But I responded to him and explained that I'm just in boring old Rome here, pretty much a local. But I'll send him off a QSL, my first Whisper shortwave listening QSL. Probably the very first Whisper shortwave listening double sideband homebrew QSL ever in ham radio history. You heard it here first, guys. Finally, the last bit of mail this week, Jonathan, KC7FYS, also known as Jonathan San, late of Tokyo. Jonathan has been a regular regular contributor to the Solder Smoke community here. He was in Tokyo for a long time working there, but has now returned to the U.S. He sent me a really excellent QSL card with a picture of Oscar, his son, when they were in Vietnam. He was operating as X-ray Victor 2 Oscar Charlie, and Oscar's depicted there with a looking very sharp in a traditional Vietnamese army helmet there, and Dad is seen off on the right with his AT-3B QRP rig on the porch on the beach, transmitting Morse code from Can Ho Province, Vietnam. Very fine. I hope you guys are doing well with the new QTH, Jonathan. Keep in touch. Regards to the family, and thanks for the card and for sending in a disc with Gene Shepherd recordings. Guys, we're at 1 hour, 2 minutes. I'm starting to grow hoarse here. I've been talking too much. So that brings to an end this edition of Solder Smoke 119. I hope everybody had a nice Thanksgiving. I'll try to get another one of these transmissions out before Christmas time. But in case I don't, have a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to all. 73 from Rome.